Sometimes it seems like the worst thing that can happen is to feel terrible. But maybe the worst thing is not to feel at all. Got to do something about that.
Welcome to Consciously, a podcast focused on honest conversations for regular people seeking spiritual growth. Here's our host, Menachem Poznanski.
Hey, Consciously family, welcome back. Okay, here we go. So I want to talk about something that's on my mind again. And it's based on some interactions I had this week with a couple listeners. Actually, I was really thankful to be able to talk to them. And then also just recognizing awareness of what's going inside of me in light of what's going on inside the world. And then hopefully, if you hold on till the end, some really important lessons for life and practical suggestions that we can play out. But before we get there, I want to thank you for subscribing. I want to thank you for joining us in the podcast. I want to invite you to subscribe to the podcast, give us stars and reviews, or most of all, share us with your friends. Visit us on our website, lightreveal.org. You can check us out on Instagram, I believe on Facebook also. I've always been posting our Sphira Omer reels, which go through each day, like a reflection and a prayer for each day of Sphira Omer, which people seem to really be enjoying, which is great. And I'm really thankful for all of that. Also check out our other podcasts and classes, Ben and Joey Rosenfeld, each with weekly things. Okay, so let's talk about what's going on in the world. So, you know, last week I did an episode, if you heard it yet, on, or at least see it in the feed, on anti-Semitism. And I ran into a listener who's a friend, and then a different friend. And the sentiment that they kind of were talking about was like, I just had enough of all this anti-Semitism and Israel stuff. You know, there was a lot of overload of Israel stuff. Obviously, this week was Yom HaZikaron, it's Yom HaTzmaut. You know, those things, well, Yom HaTzmaut in particular, always kind of ruffle people's feathers on either end. But also there's like so much going on in the world between campus stuff that's, thank God, quieting down because they're, you know, all the college students now have to go back to go back home for the summer. But also, you know, there's the political climate, what's going on in Israel. Israel going into Rafah, the United States, or at least some portions of the leaders of the United States, kind of the way that they're responding and the way that they're talking about Jews. If you're paying attention to social media, like just a lot of stuff coming out in terms of how rampant some of the anti-Semitism in the world. At the same time, I've noticed a lot of really meaningful posts about the opposite of anti-Semitism that's present in large sections of Eastern Europe and here in the United States. You know, for as many people as there are, I think sometimes the most sadistic and insane are the loudest, but for as many people as there are kind of throwing the Jewish people under the bus, there are also many, many people who have not, who have really come to our defense, which is really meaningful. And some of the like discussions that I've kind of keyed into have been really nice, you know, very elevated. So on the one hand, I kind of feel hopeful. On the other hand, I kind of feel a sense of panic. But when those two people that I was talking to were talking about the kind of apathy that they were kind of feeling, you know, I looked inside and I recognize I'm kind of feeling it also, you know, like I'm just like a little exhausted from the whole thing. Like I want to just go back to like living life. It's been a very long 6 months, which feels terrible to say, to be honest, and then to admit on a recording, you know, because in comparison to what people are experiencing in the land of Israel itself, the hostages who I think about every single day, to be honest, they're on my mind throughout the day and in my prayers, and the soldiers, and then also just the people in Israel and the conflict that's occurring there politically, the towns, especially in the north, but now also in the south, that are under attack, the tension that they must be living with, the sorrow and trauma that's kind of undergirding all that whole society and the Jewish people in general. You know, it's horrible. So in some ways, Israel and anti-Semitism is all I can think about, and it's utterly distracting. And the other way, I just kind of feel tired. You know, I feel what those guys were expressing to me. And it's not that I don't care. In some ways, it's like I just can't be bothered with it. It sounds terrible. Does that make me a bad person? That's the thoughts that were coming to me. And I had to like really grapple with that. You know, on one hand, I want to care. But on the other hand, there's this kind of growing apathy. And that gave me like opportunity to kind of rethink apathy in general, just as a human reality. So I don't want to get too lost in like the current events more than I already have just now in terms of talking about like what's going on in Israel, what's going on in the world. Obviously I have a lot of thoughts about that, but just, you know, kind of gave me inspiration to talk a little bit about apathy and a particular teaching that can come about to really understand what's going on. Like, what do we do when we find ourselves spent from caring, from fighting to be ourselves the best we can, meaning forget like circumstances in life, when we just don't feel like, I just can't be bothered to make effort to grow spiritually. Like when we're willing to care and want to care, but it just isn't there. And all we want to do is to be left alone so we can get on with the business of being alive, as challenging as that sometimes feels. Some of the destructive things people do, as you know, what we do as people to combat or respond to apathy, on the one hand, sometimes we freak out. We manufacture crises or intensity to create dramatic narratives that activate the central nervous system and propel us into action. I mean, sometimes the way that we respond to apathy that we're feeling is kind of like to meditate on how terrible everything is in an effort to try to motivate ourselves. We might do that if we're feeling apathetic about spiritual growth, to think about how horrible it is not to be growing spiritually, to feel down upon ourselves, to feel bad about ourselves. Or like in the circumstances, like I was talking geopolitically or in the world, you know, like you can go onto any of the social media platforms and get plenty of dramatized expressions of justification for feeling like really, really nervous and really out of control. So we can either like shame ourselves for not feeling that way or just kind of like work ourselves into a frenzy. There's two problems with that. On the one hand, it's not real. I mean, it's real to some degree, but it's not as real as we will make it. And the other one is that when we react that way to our apathy, when we react that way in order to create responses and get ourselves out of apathy, it manifests into like frenetic reactions that rarely serve us or our causes. I mean, if we start working ourselves up into a panic, you know, trying to convince everybody that everything is much worse than it is, then we're just going to be reactive and react on an instinctive manner. And usually that doesn't turn out very well. The other option, the other thing that people, that we do sometimes as people is we just like not care. Right? Usually that means numbing ourselves from what's going on through distractions, some benign, some rather destructive. That could go from, you know, watching movies or doing drugs, you know, like it could be, you know, strolling through social media or even reading a book to just not think about it. Now, not that that's a bad thing. Obviously, that's benign. It can even be a good thing. But if I'm doing it in order to distract myself because I just can't be bothered from the apathy that I'm experiencing, the problem with that is that the issues that I need to get some feeling about are real and they're not going away. Like, I need to continue to work on myself. I need to address those issues. This relationship, another area that I haven't yet discussed, like when I'm feeling apathetic about putting effort into a particular relationship or an aspect of my life, or an aspect of my business, a responsibility that I have, the issues are real and they're not going away. And if I ignore them, then that's going to be problematic. And then also the distractions tend to become problems themselves. As you can see, if I tend to avoid life through a particular distraction, as benign or unbenign as it is, it tends to like get ratcheted up more and more as I need more and more distraction in order to get my mind away from where I need to go. And that kind of propels me into a process of habituation and dependency. But also it just tends to become problematic. So what can we do? What do we do when we're exhausted from caring or when our problems and challenges seem to be beating us into submission? We may be holding them at bay and surviving, and so we're fine for now, but we are hardly thriving, and we definitely don't want the house of cards to come falling upon us. So what's interesting is that in Pnimiya Satora, apathy is in some ways described as one of the most dangerous things a person can encounter. It's like the worst thing in a certain way, which sometimes when you think about spiritual teachings, you would think like the worst thing is being, you know, immoral, right? Acting in a way that's licentious, right? Doing something that's like inappropriate, right? That's bad. But when you look in the holy books that are discussing like character development, one of the worst things a person can do is to just surrender to apathy. Because when I do things wrong and I feel bad, at least I'm feeling, at least I'm alive. But when apathy, or what's described as timtumalev, sets in, we're in dangerous territory because we aren't feeling anything. We're not activated. We have descended to the lowest, most based aspect in existence, which is called a domain, an unfeeling, unalive, inanimate object. We have descended from being a medaber, which is the highest, down to a place of domain. So let me give you some background information to explain what I'm talking about over there. So in the language of Pnimiya Satora, what's described is that everything in reality, everything around us, all the objects in existence, exist on four layers or levels: domain, tzomeach, chai, and medaber, right? Which refers to like inanimate objects, vegetation, things that are growing, animal life, and humans, which are literally speaking souls. Each of these levels categorize everything in our world, but they also correspond to different moments or states of being in everyone's life. Meaning, because, as we've discussed before in the podcast, Mibasari Echazaloka, from my own flesh I can see God, but also, and the world is created in a reflection of God, and the greatest image of God, the Tzelem Elokim, is a human being. So therefore, just like there are inanimate objects, growing objects, right, organic objects that don't necessarily are not moving, like trees or plants, plant life, and then also animal life, and then humans, just like there are those four levels, so too within us are those kind of four levels, and also within our lived experience. Let me elaborate a little more. So a medaber, a speaking being, that represents a person who's currently conscious and thinking about their lives. In the language of Pnimius, you see, speaking doesn't just refer to words we tell other people, but rather all the layers of communication that exist within our conscious self, how we communicate to others, but also how we communicate to ourselves, our ideas, but also our feelings. Meaning when we have a feeling, our body's trying to tell us something. That's a reflection of medaber. Being in a state of medaber means we are consciously engaged in what is going on. We not only have thoughts and feelings about what's going on, but we are taking time to process and explore the implications of what's going on so that we can respond, so that how we respond reflects what's real and also reflects our values in a certain way, in a certain manner. That's the highest state of being, and that's really where we want to try to be on a day-to-day basis when we're at our best. But as we're going to see, that's not actually the highest. And it's not always necessarily called for, as we'll describe in a moment, because a chai is not necessarily somebody who's less than. It's not necessarily a lower level, but rather a different layer of being. A chai, which is an alive being or an animal being, represents a person who is engaged in life, has passions and feelings about what's going on, and is operating according to their inner principles, but is not necessarily consciously engaged. Chai represents when we are reacting to life from instincts. Now, this could be counterproductive if we are reacting to things dysfunctionally, but also extremely productive if we are acting from ingrained and practiced principles, especially in moments of challenge where there is no time to think. Being in a state of chai means we are fully alive and connected to what's going on with thoughts and feelings, but not engaging in life per se on a plane of consciousness and forethought. Now, that could be lower than a medaber, where being a medaber, being conscious of and aware of what's going on, is what's called for, but it can also be what's totally appropriate in the moment. So that's a medaber and a chai, two different ways of us being in life. A tzomeach, a growing being, which corresponds to animal, to vegetative life, represents a person who is alive and growing, but is not in a state of active responsiveness or reactivity to life at all. Being in a state of tzomeach represents when we are just being without any feeling or thought at all. Really, men, we're showing up for what life is demanding of us. This can be counterproductive if the situation or people around us call for some type of reaction or response, but it can also be a very good manner of being because it might mean that there is really nothing that requires intense focus right now. Perhaps we did the preparatory work ahead, or perhaps whatever is going on is not so complicated, and what we really need it to do is not make things complicated, nor make them about us. You see, a chai, when we're passionate about something, there's an aspect of it where we're making it about us. Here, when we're living from a state of tzemeach, we need to just show up for life and allow the natural growth or maturation of human experience to occur. That's a tzemeach state of being. The last state of consciousness, or last state of being, is the domain. That refers to an inanimate being, a non-anim being, and that represents a person that simply is not alive or growing at all. They are here physically. They may even be talking and moving, even going through the motions, but spiritually, consciously, and emotionally, there is no one home. Being in a state of domain, what the holy books call timtum alev, is the lowest one can be. In that state, they're disconnected from self. They have surrendered to forces of separation and surrendered to a veil of darkness that surrounds us. So what do we do when we find ourselves in a domain state? What do we do when that domain state comes creeping into our lives, which is really the apathy, when we just can't be bothered? What do we do with that feeling? All around us, the world is beating us into submission to not care about what's going on, let's say in Israel, to not care about what's going on for the Jewish people all over the world, even here in the U.S. on campuses. A place that's meant to represent true progressive thinking of peace on earth and elevated consciousness, and instead is spewing the exact opposite in the name of progressiveness. How can we possibly forget what happened on October 7th, the barbarism, the tragedy, the shock? How can we not live with a constant awareness of all the tragedies of our people throughout the ages, but also all the tragedies all over the world? How can we not keep in mind a consciousness of the suffering that it is to be human? And yet, is there no good in the domain state? Aren't the apathetic people right? Aren't our own impulses to draw attention away from sadness the best thing that we can do? If we sit around thinking and feeling the enormity of what's occurred, we will hardly get anywhere. We will not be living. So what do? We can't stay in the pain and anxiety, and yet we can't afford to fall into the dangerous trap of a domain state and not care at all. What's the solution we all need? We can't afford apathy, but we definitely can't afford to stay stuck in the problem. So there's an interesting part in Sefer Tanya where the Bala Tanya discusses how to combat apathy, what to do when Timtum Halev sets in. So just to give a little bit of a context, you know, basically this is in the 26th chapter, I think. Anyway, in the first 25 chapters of Tanya, the Bala Tanya is basically laying out, context is important here, the Bala Tanya is basically laying out a program for how the spiritual process that a person walks through is, as the Torah describes it, as Moshe Rabbeinu himself testifies, Karove Lecha Hadavar Ma'od. It's abundantly close to you. So in order to basically answer the question, how could one see the path of Torah as being abundantly close? It's very difficult. It's very challenging. The Bala Tanya basically describes two specific paradigms, which we discussed before in the podcast, but we'll repeat here just for a moment. One paradigm is that essentially all of us are composed of five parts, and then also all people fall into one overriding category of types of people. You have the person who's a Rasha Gamur, who's utterly a Rasha. Then you have someone who's a Tzadik Gamur, who's utterly a Tzadik. But then there's three layers in the middle of that that's sandwiched inside. One is someone who's called a Rasha Vatovlo, someone who's essentially good, but at times falls into patterns of destructive behavior that's opposite what God wants from them. That's called a Rasha Vatovlo. Then you have somebody who's a Tzadik Viralo, someone who's a Tzadik overall, but there are subtle layers of impulse towards negativity that exist under the surface that one can perceive, though he never sins. And then there's something called a Beinoni, who's a person that never actually sins, but is constantly in a state of kind of tension and conflict with himself in trying to always do the right thing. Yet the true Beinoni, the full Beinoni, always does the right thing. The commentators on Tanya explain is that really that not only applies to people overall, but also different areas of our lives or different moments of our life. We have certain areas where we're utterly great at them, that's Tzadik Gamur, some areas where we might be a Rasha Gamur, where we just really struggle and don't have a lot of power in those areas. We tend to really not be able to effectuate our ideals. And then we have different areas, and then we have areas of our lives where we're kind of in tension, but we tend to do the right thing. We sometimes have the desire to do the wrong thing, but overall, we have the capacity to do the right thing. The other paradigm that the Alter Rebbe, that the Baal Tanya describes, is the cohabitation of the two souls that live inside of us or that make up our human self. You have the Nefesh HaBahamas, the animated animal soul, or the soul that's oriented towards material reality. And then you have a divine soul that's only oriented towards divinity, towards holiness. And the animal soul, the material soul, the material self, and the divine self are the parts of the Beinoni, which is where most of us live on a moment-to-moment basis, meaning most of us are, you know, what we're trying to do is the best that we can, one day at a time. And that's what a life of Beinonus, of being a Beinoni, or as the Baal HaTanya describes, Halavaya Beinoni, trying to aspire towards being a Beinoni is doing the next right thing one moment at a time, right? So in that process of living the life of a Beinoni, we're kind of constantly caught in a wrestling match between these two parts of ourselves, a part of ourself that wants to be actualized in material reality, wants to conquer the world and express itself externally, and then the part of us that's really only interested in doing what God wants, in manifesting the ultimate will of the Creator, and that a good, the right person, a healthy spiritual person, is someone whose Nefesh Elokis and Nefesh HaMahamis are grappling with one another, but find a way to figure out how to live their lives, so that they're both manifesting divinity, but manifesting divinity into an actualized material world. So it's a wrestling match, but it's a good wrestling match. It's like when you have the right business partner, or when a couple is in a great space, but maybe not necessarily agreeing on how to do things, or a chavrusa, if someone's has a study partner, and they're working on some kind of piece of literature, and they're kind of going back and forth and grappling with one another in order to find the outcome that's ultimately true. And that's ultimately the life of the Beinoni. But at the end of the day, the Beinoni is somebody whose divine self always has kind of the last word, right? Even though the material self wants to participate and is actively involved, but the divine self always has the upper hand, specifically because of a principle that's brought down by Chazal, Mayach Shalat al Alev, which is that the mind ultimately, at the end of the day, has predominance over what the body does in any given moment. And the way that the Baal HaTanya describes where the Nefesh HaBahamas lives, and where the Nefesh Elokis lives, where the material self lives, and where the divine self lives, the divine self is much more oriented to thoughts, and the material self is much more oriented towards feelings, and therefore when it comes to how we feel and our instincts, the material self has an advantage. But when it comes to our thoughts, our perspectives, our ideals, the divine self has an advantage. Therefore, in a healthy system, you have this kind of chavrusa that's going on between the material self and the divine self. But at the end of the day, veto power goes to the divine self, and therefore he always does what's appropriate. And that's where we want to live. Always at the end of the day, right? Our life is full. We have many, many different parts. All of those parts are kind of combined into material self and divine self. But at the end of the day, our practical activity, what we actually do, is driven by our spiritual principles, and our spiritual principles emerge from our divine self. And therefore, it ultimately has the upper hand. Now, the challenge is that, and that's where you come into Tanya in the 36th chapter, the 26th chapter, 27th chapter, 28th chapter. The Baal HaTanya starts to discuss how, but at the end of the day, if a person gets lost in certain things, the first topic he talks about is like being depressed about material challenges that they have, or being depressed about their spiritual state and the way that they're falling. If a person falls into those states, let's say of being depressed, right? But in this case, Timtumat Lev, which we'll talk about in a second, then he's not really going to have the capacity to properly grapple with the other side. And then ultimately the instinctive material self will have an upper hand, and he'll end up outside the realm of his spiritual principles. And that's not where he wants to be. He always wants the divine self to be in peak performance position. So being distraught or dismayed about my spiritual state or something that's going on in my life needs an answer, needs a spiritual etza, a suggestion about how we can walk through that. And after he makes his way through facing depression, the Alter Rebbe brings up Timtumat Lev, the challenge that can come about where a person just feels a sense of apathy. They're not depressed, but it's not so much that they're depressed. Obviously, depression and being dismayed can lead ultimately to Timtumat Lev, and that might be why the Baal HaTanya starts with depression and then lose to Timtumat Lev. But he discusses how at times people fall, a Beinoni, each one of us, faces Timtumat Lev. And the challenge is, how do we stay in the struggle of our trying to live according to our ideals? And that's really what it means to be the spiritual being having a human experience that we always discuss. Now, what's very fascinating here is that the suggestion that the Baal HaTanya makes in the 27th, 28th chapter of Tanya seems very contrary to what you would expect from a Hasidic text. And really, if you're looking at Tanya, and then if you look at the chapters that follow, no, this is probably 28, 29. The chapters that follow that are in the 30s, it seems utterly opposite. In those chapters, it begins to discuss the idea of seeing the beauty in other people and being able to have a humble spirit in front of anybody, no matter where they're holding, and to be able to love every person as they are. Really, like, those are the chapters, Lamed, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Beis, Lamed Gimel, that are really described as the chapters of love. They are the lave of Tanya. And yet here we are in the 28th, 29th chapter, and the Baal HaTanya gives a really weird suggestion. He says, beat yourself up a little. He talks about how vital it is to honestly face the reality of what's going on, to face what a human being is. How a human being, not the spiritual being having a human experience that we try to orient our perspective to, but what a human being is. A human being is an organism, is a free-willed organism with a capacity to act opposite the will of the Creator consciously and on purpose. And what that means is that the human being in some ways is lower than even the beings of darkness and the forces of evil all around us, not people, but the things that we normally associate, tragedies, terrible things that occur in the world, forces of evil, unholy animals that we couldn't bring as sacrifices in the temple, right? Those beings of darkness and forces of evil, because really those things are just doing what they were created to do. They were created, so to speak, to be evil. That's not really evil, but that's kind of part of the system. The lion isn't evil when it eats the gazelle. It's just being a lion, right? It's doing what it's supposed to do. So too, the enemies of the Jewish people, in some manner, right? They are, which I don't get lost in the conversation about free will, because for people that are our enemies, because as humans, they have a certain amount of free will, but at some point they become, as we see in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that in the beginning, Pharaoh acts opposite, opposing the Jews, and it's kind of considered his fault. And then at some point, God starts to, so to speak, harden his heart. He doesn't really have a choice. He starts to kind of lose his sense of consciousness. He becomes a vehicle of darkness, a vehicle of the other side, as they say, which is a hiding of God's light, ultimately for the purpose of revealing God's light. And the Baal HaTanya describes how we need to take a harsh and matter-of-fact look in the mirror at who we are. We are beings that not only can act opposite the will of the Creator, we do that. And the intention of that meditation, to think badly about ourselves, right? Which again, this is not for somebody who's feeling bad about sins that they did or feeling bad about their lives. That's not the suggestion at all that he gives for that. He gives entirely different suggestions. What he's talking about here is when a person looks in the mirror and realizes, I just can't be bothered. And what the Baal HaTanya, the response of the Tanya to that is, you're in big trouble, man. That's very, very dangerous. As we described earlier in the context of a domain, you know, you don't want to be a domain, because at least when you were sinning and distressed about it, you had feelings. You were passionate about trying to do the right thing. When you're in apathy, even if you're not doing the wrong thing, you're now a domain. You're not even feeling. And this harsh and matter-of-fact look in the mirror is meant to shock our system into place. But then he does a very interesting thing. He makes kind of a pivot in the midst of his discussion about how really we, you know, our apathy comes from the fact that we think that, like, it comes from a measure of arrogance. Like, I just can't be bothered with this. I can't, you know, I had enough of this stuff. And there's a certain amount of there's a certain way in which the spirit of negativity and a lack of compassion has overtaken our hearts, and we are now looking at the world through a lens of callousness, quite opposite the Olam Chesed Yibane, the world was built on kindness, with which God wills us to be. And the Baal HaTanya describes that we should really take a look in the mirror and, like, that's really bad. What's wrong with me? And then comes the pivot point. It's very powerful. He says something very, very powerful. He says, you're making a mistake. Not only are we not a domain, we're not even a someach. We're not a chai, and we're not even a medaber. Before we describe the way in which a human manifests themselves into the world or responds to the world, a domein is someone who's uncaring, is not moving forward. A tzameach is someone who's not necessarily emotionally or intellectually or cognitively or consciously connected, but they're kind of moving along and growing, and there's good parts to the tzameach. And a chai is someone who's passionately engaged, but not necessarily holding in a state of mindful consciousness. And then the medaber is someone who's kind of fully engaged. And that would seem to be what a human is. That a human being, or the spiritual being having a human experience, is either in a state of medaber, chai, tzomeach, or domein. But in fact, what the Baal HaTanya does is that he says, no, really the problem is that you don't actually realize who you are. It's not just that you're a spiritual human having a human experience. You are a soul. Now, what that means is that we're not only not a domein, we're not a tzemeach, we're not a chai, and we're not a medaber really either. In the frame of being, growing, reacting, and responding, the truth is that nihilists kind of have a point. What's the point of the whole thing? Why should we bother trying to be a medaber or making effort to be a chai, or at least to be a tzemeach? Why shouldn't we be a domein? Why does this all make a difference. Like, at the end of the day, what we are is humans. We can act opposite God's will. We do act opposite God's will. We're imperfect. Even if today I make some progress in acting God's will, what's the point of me engaging the struggle? How can I continue to live in the suffering that's all around me in an imperfect world? And yet, how can I forget? Life is just a trap. So why bother at all? Is it really going to matter? Have things really changed? Are things really better? We as humans seem, on the one hand, so close to an enlightened state of being, maybe something close to like a Madaber state of being, to mastering our world and perfecting all of our reality. And yet in a flash, we can be so far from that, not only fall into a state of chai, but even to a state of tzemeach. We can totally lose consciousness of what's reasonable or real. We can have groups like Queers for Hamas, or we can have feminist groups justifying sexual violence against women. Utter insanity. The realm of men seems insane, so why bother anyway? If a medaber is the highest that we can go, at the end of the day, we just end up being an imperfect human. So what does it mean to be a spiritual being having a human experience? And the answer is that a medaber is not really who we are at all. I'll give you an example. If someone asks, who is that? Yossi? The real answer is no. It might look like that's Yossi, but really that's just where Yossi lives. We are not manifest physicality, growing organisms, evolved species, or even human beings. We are spiritual beings, spark of the divine, expressions of the Creator's highest will and desire. We are beings capable of carrying the intensity of our thoughts and feelings, walking through life one foot in front of the other, and also disassociating from all the pain, all at the same time. See, part of what's revealed here is that part of what it means to be a spiritual being having a human experience means I'm not just trapped by a singular perspective. Because if the best I can do is a medaber, at some point I'm going to be a domeim. So what's the point? But if what I am is a spiritual being, is a soul, then I can be all of those things. I can be a medaber in some areas of my life. I can be a chai in some areas of my life. I can be a tzemeach, a growing being, and I could be a domeim in some areas of my life. You see, the nihilists are not wrong because of some kind of humanist truth. The nihilists that tell us that everything is hopeless and everything's not going to be are not wrong because there's some kind of like humanist ideal that humanity is going to grow outside of itself. They are wrong because we're not really human at all. Human is where we live. It's not who we are. It's not a shock that insanity around us is emerging from the departments of humanities at university, because to be human is to be limited. At the end of the day, it's a state of separation. It emerges from the world of separation. When you strip away all the layers, the most evolved and developed culture of humanity will only produce a higher form of separation and therefore insanity. It is only the awareness that human might be where we live, but what we are is spiritual, even more than spiritual, a spark of infinite divinity that can allow us to fulfill the inner desire of the Creator to be that spark of divine in actuality by revealing that truth into a universe of separation. Let me review that for a second, just to state it again. What we're saying is that part of the way that we see ourselves is that we see ourselves, the highest aspect of ourselves, as medaber, as a conscious being that can think. When you think that that's the highest part of a human being, you're limited because that, even that aspect of ourself, emerges from the world of separation that's drawn to selfishness, to self-centeredness. So we can't become enamored by our most human part of ourselves, medaber, because at some time we'll be a chai, we'll be driven by our passions. At some time we'll be a tzemeach. At some time we won't have any thoughts or feelings at all, but we just do the right thing it wrote because that's the best that we can do for today. And sometimes we just can't be bothered at all. Sometimes we're just the domeim. We can't even move. That's what it means to be human. So even in our moments of even the most beautiful poetry or the most exquisite painting that can be painted by a human being will be painted by an artist who we know in history might do really horrible things because we're human. But what the Balatanya is revealing is that what we really need to realize is that we are not human. Human is where we live. What we really are is souls. And what he does, the exercises that he does, is he invites us to look in the mirror and try to become disenamored by even the highest part of our manifest self, of our actualized self that's not really who we are. To not be so preoccupied with our even most human self, because that's not really where we are. And at the end of the day, that's imperfect. And then to realize once we beat that part up, when we kind of knock it down and realize, like, you're a human, even if you've done something exquisite and beautiful that expresses the beauty of the creator, at the end of the day, tomorrow, you're going to do something that's not the exquisite beauty of the creator. So what point is there? And even if you never do that, which is opposite the will of the creator, there's always a part of you that wants to. And there's always a potential for you to do that. So living inside of you is darkness. So what are you so enamored by? Why do you think you're so important? And the answer is, I am important because I have a soul. I am a soul. I am a spiritual being. I am a spark of infinite divine. Of infinite divine love. And what the Alter Rebbe, what the Balatanya reveals is that when we reflect on this idea, when we disencumber ourselves from looking at ourselves as what we want out of life, our aspirations for physically conquering this world, which is an expression of part of us, but not who we are, and we begin to realize who our true self is, the solution that emerges is a sense of awareness of who we truly are, a sense of spiritual connectedness. Our apathy begins to fade, and we begin to develop a fortitude to move forward. Our panic begins to become a passion to act and compassion for what is, and we can walk forward and do our best to be what he would have us be, holding in space all of these different parts. We can hold in space the fact that the world is full of suffering and I can't be bothered. And yet here I am trying to show up for today to be the best me that I could be and bring myself to the plate as best as I can. Why? Because I am not a human being thrust into a world of separation, trying to make unity out of separation. I am a spark of infinite divine that was sent in this to this world to reveal the unity that exists within the separation, to create a dira betachtonum, a dwelling space in the lowest world, which was God's intention because he felt like it. The greatest magic trick that ever was, to reveal unity in separation, to reveal infinite within finite, to in fact reveal that which is even beyond infinite, from within the tapestry of an exquisite and beautiful yet deeply complicated spiritual being having a human experience. So what does this all come down to? What's the solution? The solution is get over yourself. That's the solution I'm telling myself. I can't handle this. Am I going to think about it more? The answer is yes. Think about it more. Am I going to pray more? Why should I pray more? The hostages are still there. I'm just burnt out. I hear you. Don't take yourself so gosh darn seriously. Take a deep breath. Realize that you are a spark of infinite love. And therefore, you're not really burnt out. There's a part of you that's burnt out. There's aspects of you burnt out. And maybe you need to be kind and compassionate to those parts and give them a little bit of a break, but then lean all the way in. So that's my message. My soapbox, my message. So I was feeling burnt out from all this stuff, feeling like nobody wants to hear this Israel stuff. So I'm fortunate enough to have a holy wife, and she bought us tickets to the Nova Festival exhibit in New York City. And I went there today. I'm actually speaking to you just from there. Excruciating, like horrible. Like, I mean, as you know from if you were listening to the episode that I did on my trip to Israel, I had the fortune to visit the holy space that is where Nova was, the Kedoshim that passed there. We daven mincha there. It was very, very powerful. But to be in the midst of the exhibit, to see the people's things, to watch the videos of them in their states of panic, to try to remember that there's real people that are really suffering. And even if I can only lend them whatever compassion I can muster, I'm bringing infinite love into a deeply dark space. So, you know, not to, as my son would say, not to glaze, but but that's what I did today. And I'm just sharing it because I didn't want to, but I'm happy that I did. Leaned in, didn't take myself too seriously. And I'm feeling deeply more connected and more inspired to try to lean in further and further into compassion and to do what I can today to make this world a space of light and a space of love. Have a great week.
Thank you for joining the Consciously family. Consciously is brought to you by The Light Revealed, a social media publisher bringing messages of Jewish spirituality and recovery to whoever is looking for them. Consciously is made possible by the kindness of the Capellius family in memory of Tzipora Bas Ravaram. If you've enjoyed this podcast, you can give us a review and subscribe wherever else you get your podcasts. We love connecting with you, so please check out our website, thelightrevealed.org. Feel free to email us at thelightrevealed@tlrfamily.org. Our producer is Morty Schwartz. Our social media content team is Zoe Poznanski and Tehilo Nassanian. The assistant to the regional co-host is Shmaya Honickman, and our music is by Eitan Katz featuring Zusha. Thank you for joining, and we wish you the most blessed day in only revealed ways.